buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Hour number two on a Monday, live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. It's overtime with William Pattison, Dawson Wise, and Jace Brown. Great first hour. We'll continue it here in the second. Breaking news. Victor Wembanyama named the NBA Rookie of the Year. No real surprise here. Chet Holmgren had a really good season as well. I thought he could have fought for it, but Wembanyama really came on in the second half of the season. And that guy, that's not the last time we'll be talking about him.
No.
At all. No. He's an alien. He's a freak. He's going to be in the league taking over for the next 15-plus, hopefully.
Did y'all see his logo when they released it, like the alien-looking thing?
Yeah.
Did y'all see that? Yeah. Were y'all fans of it? I didn't know if I was a fan of it.
I don't know yet.
Not the biggest.
There's some better ones. I look at that, and I'm like, okay, I don't really know who – like, I don't know. You know, if you see some logos, you can, like, look at it and be like, okay, I know who that is.
Yeah, like the LeBron one with the LJ and the crown.
Like, LeBron one, the D. Rose one, even Kyrie's his old one.
Yeah.
Like, you know, John Morant's, I think, is pretty easy. The Wembanyama one, it kind of looked like a minor league baseball team logo. You know, like the aliens or something. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Anyway, we're not talking about that the rest of this hour. We'll go around the association. A couple of games and series wrapped up over the weekend. Cleveland gets it done against Orlando. And the New York Knicks and Indiana Pacers set to tip off in about 30 minutes. We'll get you ready for that one. And we'll have in the news with Dawson Wise. But let's head back to the association where the Cleveland Cavaliers, Cleveland, this is for you, got it done on Sunday. Whether or not Donovan Mitchell's long-term future with the Cavaliers is in doubt, the city belongs to him right now. Mitchell, the successor to LeBron James in Cleveland in so many ways, led the franchise to its first playoff series win without the King since 1993. And a 106-94 win over the Orlando Magic in the first round series. Mitchell, following his 50-point performance in Game 6, would not be denied on Sunday with 24 of his 39 points coming in the second half, serenaded by the deafening MVP chant in Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. However, Paolo Banchero put another tremendous effort out as well. First playoff series for him, and with the Magic, 38 points, 16 rebounds. A guy we talked about last week is maybe the best player in this series to not go down without a fight. The 21-year-old became the youngest player to score 30-plus points in three games in the same playoff series. The Cavs will now face the top-seeded Boston Celtics in an Eastern Conference semifinal. Game one will be in Boston on Tuesday. Going on my takeaways from this game, I think going into it, my prediction was I think the home team will win every game in this one. Two relatively younger teams, one a little bit more young than the other. The Magic played really well at home. The Cavs played better on their home court as well. I thought the big missing piece for Orlando in the series was three-point shooting, and that was evident again yesterday. But also in Game 7, Franz Wagner, really tough outing for him. 12% shooting from the field, just 6 points. And I really like Franz Wagner. Like he's a guy that will be around there for a while. Him and Paolo Banchero, they were by far the best players for Orlando in this series. But your second best player can't put up 6 points. You know, that's what Klay Thompson does, and that's why he's, you know, probably going to be leaving Golden State this weekend. But honestly, I kind of projected him to go to Orlando, so maybe him and Franz could have something to talk about. But that's nevertheless. But Banchero is a star. And this Orlando team will be right back here next year. They just need more shooting. They didn't get much from Cole Anthony or Markelle Fultz. Jalen Suggs, I think, is now the guy they'll roll with heading into the next year because of what he was able to do in this series, be a pest, be a guy that can knock down a consistent shot or two. But Cole Anthony and Markelle Fultz didn't really get much from them. And Gary Harris can't be your only veteran shooter on the roster. I think this Magic team will be good going forward. They're just a little bit ahead of schedule, but this was a good opportunity for them to see where they match up in a playoff series. Now, for the Cavs, Donovan Mitchell, a guy that has had questions about his playoff performances, especially after last year against New York, and really early on in this series as well. We were kind of debating last week, Paolo Banchero or Donovan Mitchell, who's the best player in the series. I said Banchero, and then Donovan Mitchell, I guess, heard our episode and came back with a 50-point performance and 39-point performance. So Cleveland rolls with Donovan Mitchell and how good he is. So I think they've got a good lineup, good roster. No Jared Allen yesterday. He'll be back in this Celtics series. I think this Cavs team is good enough to win a game or two against Boston. They're not good enough to win the series, but this is a big milestone for them to win a series without LeBron playing for them. Those are my takeaways from the game. What say you, Dawson?
For Orlando, it's the supporting cast did not show up, and they had a really ugly day from three. There were several possessions where it was three-point shot, three-point shot, three-point shot, three-point. I mean, it was just over and over and over again, and just nothing was falling. It was really, really ugly. Franz Wagner had the ugliest of the days. Jalen Suggs did not look good either. He shot 2 for 13.
Yeah.
And both of his makes were threes. He was 2 for 10 from three. So not a good day for him. Not a good day for the whole supporting cast. And that's why he lost the game. I mean, he got another almost a game-winning worthy performance from Paolo Banchero, same as Game 5 in Cleveland, where you almost pull that game out. If you do pull that game out, that shot goes at the end. You're not in this Game 7. You win the series at home. Mm. That's coming back to bite you now because Cleveland, really, they didn't get a ton of supporting cast performance either. The X factor for Cleveland, and I didn't think I'd be saying this year, was Caris LeVert,
who
got 15 off the bench. He ends up being the X factor in the game for either team. I mean, Donovan Mitchell is obviously the number one guy, but the guy that helped Cleveland get over the finish line was Caris LeVert, and I just did not – It's the unexpected guys in Game 7s, and LeVert comes in, hits a few big shots. All of a sudden, Cleveland goes from down 9-10 points.
Yeah.
They actually cut into the lead at the break. It was 16 late in the first half. Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of figure, okay, Orlando's rolling. Are they going to be the first team to win a road game in this series? Cut it to 10, and then all of a sudden, LeVert comes off the bench, and you look up, and Cleveland's leading by 6.
Mm-hmm.
So LeVert was big for them. Donovan Mitchell's big. Again, I don't think they have the juice to run with Boston, especially if Jared Allen continues to be out.
No.
That's not going to help them. I think they have the juice to win a game, maybe two. That was a great home environment in Cleveland, by the way, yesterday.
They always
really
have a
great
one.
Atmosphere there. So maybe you win Game 3 at home, Game 4 at home, something like that. But beyond that, they don't have the juice to beat the Celtics, but a nice series win for them that they can do it without LeBron.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, Game 7, big time takeaways was, star-studded efforts from each team's number one guy. Like Elav said, Banchero going out there, giving it all, 38 points, 16 rebounds, nothing to be ashamed of in his performance. And, of course, Donovan Mitchell showing up. Didn't see, the most efficient night from the field from him. Missed 16 of his 27 shots, but was still able to corral 9 rebounds as well. So him being able to be effective, not only by shooting the ball, but being able to get other aspects in as well was pretty big. Max Strus shot pretty well from the field as well. I think that was one leg that they used to get up over it. And as you were saying, Dawson, them being able to overcome that, I think it might have gotten up to 18 points.
Yeah.
With 28 minutes left in that entire game and being able to go plus 30 from then on out, I thought that was a huge thing for them to roll with. Like you said, Caris LeVert was huge. Getting 15, it feels like he's been huge all season. He's just been coming off the bench, putting together 30 plus minutes every night, and getting the ball in the bucket at a pretty high clip. So him being able to continue that in the playoffs is a good sign. But without Jared Allen, I don't think they'll make too much noise in this second round. I think with some of the slip ups Boston had at the beginning of the series against Miami, I think that's one thing to look at. But those games 3 through 5, they were pretty solid. They really didn't look like they had many cracks there. So Cleveland's really going to have to do some digging, especially if they're without Jared Allen.
Yeah, moving on to an individual performance. Donovan Mitchell, as we mentioned, 50 points in Game 6, 39 in Game 7. Really big performances from him. The question coming into the playoffs, is he able to perform in the big moments? He wasn't able to do it last year and hasn't been able to really replicate the success he had in Utah since being traded. Just very inconsistent. And he was in this series as well. But in the biggest moments, you need your stars to make the big plays. And Donovan Mitchell was able to do that. So I think it proves that he is good enough to be a number one on a playoff team. Now, the rest of the way will depend on if he's one of the best number ones in the league. And really, I think his performance in this series will dictate if he's a Cavalier next year. Mm-hmm. Because there's obviously a lot of rumors and noise like there always is with the big market teams like the Lakers and Knicks of possibly adding one more piece. Donovan Mitchell has been a name thrown around in that. You know, if you could get him off a bad performance, you know, the Lakers or Knicks would probably like that, so the money would come down. But, you know, Donovan Mitchell continues to have to prove himself that, okay, I can play in the playoffs and I can be a number one on a playoff-winning team. So far, he's proved that.
Yeah, I think he has too. Now, my question going forward into this series would be, and I think this is a fair question, can he have his Jalen Brunson moment from a couple years ago where he becomes that guy that can suddenly be a superstar, can win you a big series like this, can take you past a team that you're not supposed to beat like Jalen Brunson did against the Phoenix Suns, where he took over in that series, took the Mavericks past the Suns, and all of a sudden now he's a superstar. Can Donovan Mitchell make that same leap? This is not the Orlando Magic coming up. Mm-hmm. And I was really high on the Orlando Magic,
yeah.
But they're very young. Boston is not. Quite the opposite, actually. A lot of experience. If he can do it against Boston, I think he'll have proved a lot more than he proved against Orlando, at least in my opinion. But he has to do it against the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the continuation of his success in the second round, I think it'll only, you know, further the point of him being sort of almost an answer in Cleveland. I think, you know, since going there, he's provided such an uptick with some of the pieces around him. Like we said, Caris LeVert, Darius Garland has had a couple of decent seasons, had a sort of an off year this year, was in and out with injuries, and Jared Allen being another piece added there. I think, you know, with the base that you have there, you don't really want to move on from, you know, a guy like Donovan Mitchell, who's going to have such a high volume there, and to have to move on from that and find a guy to replace him. I think it's going to be harder than just keeping him there. But, you know, again, you really want to prove yourself against these higher tier teams. And of course, who better to do it than, you know, the best team in the league. I think, you know, his ability on the offensive end is way more than anybody else on that Cleveland squad. I think his ability to, you know, create shots, whether it be him, you know, taking the ball to the rack or just kicking it out from driving so much, I think he provides such, you know, a big tool, I guess, you know, almost like a Swiss Army knife for that Cleveland offense compared to anybody else. It's really going to be hard for them to move on.
Moving over to the New York Knicks and Indiana Pacers series, which is set to begin in about 15 minutes in Madison Square Garden. The New York Knicks and Indiana Pacers are ready to play each other in a playoff series for the first time since 2013, what was a regular occurrence in the 90s when these two squads faced off in six postseason series over 8 years, is happening again. This is a slow versus fast, duress versus finesse, one team that wants to beat its opponent down facing another that wants to elude every tag. Two really different teams here. And going into what intrigues us the most, I think it's the contrast of styles for me, because Indiana has been one of the best offensive teams all year long. Tyrese Haliburton has not been as good as he was going into the All-Star break, but is kind of dumbed down to a really kind of almost a Magic Johnson-esque large guard that can do a really good job of facilitating and getting other guys involved while also getting a couple of key buckets in. And on the other side, you have the New York Knicks, very tough and rough. Isaiah Hartenstein likes to body down low. Josh Hart and DiVincenzo and Brunson all kind of have this swagger and good chemistry together. OG Anunoby as well comes over from Toronto. Actually, another fun little note, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby started the season together in Toronto. Yeah. Now they're facing each other in the playoffs on two different teams. So I like this series because of the contrast of styles, the way these teams play. And the reason why I took the over tonight and for the Knicks team total is because I think this is going to be a back-and-forth game, very high scoring in terms of how the Knicks usually play. The Pacers always play high-scoring games. But I think the Knicks get it done at home, but they're going to have big productions from Josh Hart, DiVincenzo, the guys on the perimeter outside of Brunson. And I think the most intriguing thing of everything is how does Indiana defend Jalen Brunson? We saw in the Bucks series, Andrew Nembhard did a really good job of making Damian Lillard uncomfortable. T.J. McConnell does that as well, making people uncomfortable. Are they able to do that to Jalen Brunson, I think, is the big question that has to be asked.
A couple things for me. Number one, I'll go the other way. How does New York attack Indiana's offense defensively? We know they like to be physical, but Indiana is such a lethal offense, so many great scorers. You know, who do you try to lock down? Do you try to lock down Siakam? Does that maybe allow Miles Turner to get involved, Haliburton to get involved? You know, where do you go defensively to keep this offense off the board? You probably attack Halliburton, their biggest facilitator. That's probably where you'd start. But, you know, if you put all your investment into Halliburton, Siakam, I mean, he did it with the Raptors on that championship run. He knows how to do it himself. It's going to be interesting to see kind of where they choose the point of attack tonight defensively. And then, secondly, on the other side, I know they have Jalen Brunson, but does New York have enough offensive firepower beyond him to outpace Indiana? Because Indiana's a really good offense. If their offense gets moving, gets rolling, especially on the road, does New York have the little bit of extra juice to outpace them? That's going to be really interesting as well.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to see how the Pacers go about guarding Brunson because, you know, he's not the biggest guy on the court. Do you want to, you know, sacrifice maybe, you know, some drives towards the basket with, you know, more of a lengthy defender? Mike can throw Siakam out there on him. I think that could be an interesting look to throw out there. I know you brought up T.J. McConnell as well as Andrew Nembhard. Both of those guys really shined in that first series against the Bucks. So it'd be really interesting to see how they push and pull between those two, because, you know, Brunson's a big guy that's really great in the mid-range. I think that's one part of his game that's a little overlooked sometimes, just, you know, the volume that he gets from, you know, inside the three-point line but not quite to the paint. I think he's really great around that, you know, fadeaway, you know, turnaround jump shots. He's really good in that department as well. But, you know, to respond to some struggles on the offensive end, I think he's really just going to have to heat up from outside. You know, we haven't really seen him take over a game from three-point land, which you know, he's very much capable of doing with the amount of time that he has the ball in his hands. But I think if he's able to heat up from outside, that's just going to add a layer to that offense. It's really going to start opening things up. And, of course, if he can continue his onslaught of really tough buckets, we saw a bunch over against Philly in that first round. If he can continue doing that, it's really going to be hard to stop that Knicks offense, even with the slower pace.
The 76ers guarded Brunson well, and he still dropped 39-plus points in each of the final four games of the series. Going back to how Indiana will handle Brunson, you know, I think Brunson, one thing that's really good about him in terms of his traits is he's not really fazed a whole lot. He's really tough-minded, and I think a lot of that comes from his time in Villanova, you know, with Jay Wright. He instilled that in him, and he's carried that his whole way. Also kind of a guy that has a chip on his shoulder, right? You know, played really well in Dallas. They thought, you know, maybe they'd extend him and give him a big-time contract. They don't. He bets on himself, goes to New York, and is now one of the best point guards in the league. So he's got this really big the swagger and mental toughness that I think plays well against any matchup. And in this one, when I expect Indiana to play very similar to how they did with Dame, kind of focus all in on Jalen Brunson, he's going to get his buckets. But, you know, play him full court, make him uncomfortable, I think goes a long way. Because if you're pressing him up the court and not allowing him to get, you know, like if you're pressing a guy, right, and you press him for 6 seconds instead of him, let him just trot up the court, you know, for 3 seconds and get into the half court. You see what I'm saying here? Like just kind of delaying the rhythm of how they usually do it. I think that could go a long way for Indiana. I think they're going to try and say, all right, we're going to tank Brunson. You other guys are going to have to win the series for him. So that's what I expect, and that's how I think the Pacers will handle it. But I think Brunson has the DNA and mental toughness to be able to get by it, and that's why I think New York can win this series.
Yeah, my answer was actually going to be, does it matter how Indiana handles him? Because I don't think you can. I think he's going to get his. I do think I do agree they're probably going to say, okay, we're gonna lock him down as much as we can, and you know, DiVincenzo and Hart and these guys, you're going to have to beat us. And if they do, they do. If they don't, they don't. I think that's the risk they're going to take. But, again, I mean, a guy that is just going to play, he's going to play through it. He's going to get his. He's a star. He's going to find ways to score. Even if they do load all their investment into him, he's going to find ways to score. That's the type of player he is. So how do they handle him? I don't think it matters, but I think they invest all their energy into him defensively.
Yeah, it feels sort of like answering the question that we had last hour about how does Denver stop Anthony Edwards? It's really hard to stop a guy like that, especially when he's on a run like that. We saw Philly try to, and we saw big-time performances from Tyrese Maxey on the offensive end to try to, you know, offset that. But Jalen Brunson, if Tyrese Maxey's scoring 44, Brunson's scoring 46, it kind of felt like that was just how that series played out. But, you know, the Pacers, they're really going to have to pick their battles here. Do they want him to, you know, be forced inside? Do they want to keep him on the outside where he hasn't had as much success? It's really going to be hard for them to corral him in that department. But, you know, again, like Elif said, you've really got to force these other players to beat you. You can't have just one guy run it up.
So when you look around the playoffs, there's kind of a lack of household names in big market teams. Sure, Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, Jason Tatum. Obviously, these guys are emerging stars, if not already stars in this league. And you could say, you know, Anthony Edwards, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, these are known names, but there's no Steph Curry. There's no LeBron James. There's no Kevin Durant. And this is the second round. And, you know, I'm not really focused on NBA ratings and stuff like that like some people are. But in terms of the NBA product, you know, if the Knicks get bounced here, that's one of your biggest market teams. And, you know, you look at the Western Conference, you got the Mavericks, the Thunder, the Timberwolves, the Nuggets. Like, we know them. But I think it's really important for the Knicks to do well because I think the engagement will continue to rise as the Knicks continue to do well because they're a household name. Boston, New York for an Eastern Conference Finals, that's what brings in a lot of people. These are two of the most historic teams in the league. Matching up with an opportunity to go to the finals. Like, that's really cool. And you've got Jason Tatum, I guess maybe not young anymore. Some people still call him young. He's been in the league for 8 years.
He's 26, yeah, something like that.
But, you know, Jason Tatum, the new star for Boston in terms of their history, right? This is the new guy. For New York, it's Jalen Brunson. This is their really first star they've had since Carmelo Anthony, yep. You know, if we're being honest. So I know this is kind of like going off track here of our analysis, but – how important is it for a big market team like the Knicks to do well in this series in terms of the NBA product and the ratings it puts out?
It's big. I mean, you want eyeballs on the sport, and that's how you get eyeballs on the sport. If you can have, you know, some promotional material saying, hey, here's two of the most historic franchises in our league, and on top of that, two of the biggest stars in our league in Jalen Brunson and Jason Tatum, going head-to-head, and the winner gets to go play for a championship. And you consider all the other storylines, too. Boston's looking for revenge in the finals. Got bounced by Miami last year. Got bounced in the finals 2 years ago. New York is looking to just get back there for the first time in what feels like forever. So to have that storyline and just how historic both teams are, the Boston-New York rivalry, we know how that sports rivalry works in those two cities. Mm-hmm. There's so many storylines, so it's important for them to get there because of the star power and because of the history.
Yeah, it feels like with it being, you know, New York being the biggest sports market in the world, it feels like. I think every big name brand you can think about in all major sports runs through New York at this point. I think it's good for them to, you know, finally taking that step towards consistency. I think the Knicks being as good as they have been this year and, you know, looking to the future with Jalen Brunson, I think it's huge for them on that. It's really nice to have a change after a couple of subpar years for the Knicks for quite some time. And, you know, on top of that, we've seen it in the first round. We talked about it last week with, you know, how well those Knicks fans travel. We talked about how, you know, the Philly owners were having to buy their own tickets just so that the Knicks fans just don't take over the arena. I think it only adds to, you know, the commerce side of it, not only, but, you know, there's an emphasized brand. It really does grow the game of basketball.
Yeah, I think it's important for, in terms of the league, to have these big brands, to have these big names. You don't have it with necessarily the guys you've been rolling with over the last, you know, 10, 15 years of LeBron, Durant, and Curry. And I think that's good in the fact that you've now got new guys that are taking over, and these guys will be the names we recognize and remember for the next 10, 15 years. But it's kind of a little bit of an adjustment right now, kind of a pivot into what the NBA will be over the next couple of years. When we come back, we'll have In the News with Dawson Wise. Stay right here on Overtime.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jacob Wilco at Knoxville Smiles. Have you ever wanted to improve the look of your smile? We know firsthand what the power of a great smile means to a person's confidence and health. Our team of doctors can provide you with an array of options for helping you achieve your cosmetic goals. From simply moving teeth into a better position, to reversible cosmetic bonding, to full mouth implant-supported dentures, it is our goal to help patients feel good about their appearance while achieving optimal health. Want to learn more? Call us at 865-539-1776 to schedule an evaluation, or visit us online at knoxvillesmiles.com.
Are you tired of the same boring workouts that don't get you the results that you want? Check out HotWorks. With infrared light therapy and personalized wellness options, you'll be able to get the perfect workout every time. With the hot yoga or any of the other isometric options at HotWorks, you'll feel the detoxification right away. Hop on over to 10839 Hardin Valley Road, or visit any of the other Knoxville locations to get started on your personalized journey.
From high school heroes to college legends, First Bank is proud to champion our local athletes. But we don't just back you on the field or on the court. We team up with customers to score the wins that grow communities. That takes better products, more accessible, flexible bankers, and the quick answers and solutions you can run with. Don't just make the switch. Make the team that champions community. First Bank. Bank local. Get more team spirit. Member FDIC.
I was afraid to cut the cord, but once I did, I couldn't believe it took so long to do it. Paying too much for my cable bill had become a bad habit. I either wasn't getting what I wanted or never knew where to find any of my favorite shows until it was too late. Plus, the prices just kept going up. Thankfully, I discovered a new way to watch, called Philo. For just $25 a month, I can catch all my favorite shows on networks like BET, MTV, and TLC. It even has Nickelodeon for my kids. I can watch anytime I want, anywhere I want. Plus, Philo lets me have up to 3 streams at once, so everyone can watch what they want at the same time. Throw in the unlimited DVR that saves all my favorites for up to a year, and this really is the best deal in TV. I just wish I hadn't waited so long. Sound too good to be true? Well, try it out for yourself, and you'll see why people who love TV love Philo. Go to philo.tv, that's philo.tv, and start your 7-day free trial now.
What's the difference between an ordinary EV and a Mercedes-Benz EV? The feeling. Electric is what gets you there. Mercedes-Benz is what moves you. In ways no other automaker can. Feel the freedom of the superbly versatile 7-seater EQB. Revel in the inspired, customizable comfort of the EQE sedan. Sense the brilliant intelligence of the EQE SUV. Discover the boundless capability of the EQS SUV. And luxuriate in the flagship meets spaceship magnificence of the EQS sedan. Every Mercedes-Benz electric vehicle offers the very latest MBUX voice-activated AI software, as well as remote access to a whole host of functions via the Mercedes Me Connect app. The vehicle's electric, the feeling all Mercedes, the choice all yours. Test drive a Mercedes-Benz electric today. At your local dealer or learn more at mbusa.com/EQ.
7:30 in the night. I get those goosebumps.
All right, back here on Overtime on a Monday. We appreciate you listening along with us after a big weekend in sports. Now it's time to see what's in the news with Dawson Wise.
An unfortunate first story today, some mourning going on here in the TriStar State. The season is over for the Nashville Predators. The Vancouver Canucks eliminated the Preds with a 1-0 win in Game 6 of the Western Conference First Round Series. On Friday at Bridgestone Arena, the Canucks win the series 4-2. This was a tightly contested game. It was tied 0-0 until the dying moments of the contest. With 1:39 to go, Brock Besser dropped a slick no-look pass right onto the stick of I never remember how to pronounce this guy's name. Pius Suter, I think, who just put it out of the reach of Juicy Saros and into the back of the Nashville net. The goal came after a turnover by Preds forward Colton Sissons in his own defensive zone. Nashville had chances, though. The Preds failed to score on a 4-minute power play in the second period and on a power play early in the third period as well. They end the series 2-for-21 on the power play in 6 games. Vancouver also recovered in the shots category, outshooting Nashville 29-27 in Friday's game. Nashville's biggest chance came with Saros on the bench and the extra attacker on. Vancouver received a massive cross-checking penalty with 34 seconds to go in the game. On the ensuing faceoff, Nashville controlled the puck and threw shot after shot on Canucks goalie Artur Silovs. What a series for him, by the way. With 10 seconds left, a rebound popped out to the right circle. Nashville appeared to have a wide-open look at the net, but at the last moment, JT Miller dove across the front of the goal and blocked the shot with the final buzzer sounding moments later. The loss ends an unexpected season for the Preds, who threw together a strange combo of veterans, depth players, and rookies to supplement the mainstay stars and contend earlier than expected. Nashville is on a good trajectory, however, and to see them not only make the playoffs but make a little bit of noise too is a very encouraging sign for Preds fans. Again, we talked about this after Game 5. This team is way ahead of schedule. I figured it would be another year or two before they really started to contend. So after the immediate post-game disappointment wore off, you know, that always happens no matter if your team was supposed to win a series or not. You know, after that kind of wore off, I was like, okay, This team's ahead of schedule. They've got a good young core. They kept the stars around. Now, some questions revolving around, you know, does Forsberg, you know, do they keep him around? Do they keep Juicy Saros around? Some young goalies coming up through the system. Maybe it's time to move on from Saros in the offseason. So some questions about the stars, but your young players are panning out really well. Luke Evangelista is going to be a star one day, and it's not now, but he showed moments. He's going to be a superstar. You've got several guys on this team that are going to be very good. The team's heading in the right direction. They've hit on Andrew Burnett and a coach. I didn't know what they were getting when they got him, I believe from the Devils coaching staff. But, I mean, they have come. It's a total hit. He has been outstanding. Good motivator, good coach, good X's and O's, and he's got them working in the right direction. It's encouraging, yet disappointing at the same time. You thought maybe Vancouver was the easier draw of the first-round series. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, you know, disappointing, but very encouraging to see the direction they're going. How should Preds fans feel about the season and where the team is headed?
Well, I think they should feel about the series. Obviously, any team or any fan of a team, when they lose in the playoffs, it hurts, you know, because you get your hopes up and you believe that this team can make a run like, you know, like anyone does. So I think they should be, you know, not frustrated or upset, but, you know, disappointed. You wanted to continue to see him playing, so I understand that. But as a series and the season as a whole, Preds fans should be proud. You know, this was a team that is going through the walks of a rebuild, wasn't really supposed to be in this moment, really have a good end of the season, able to play and be in this position. So I think there's a lot to be proud of in the fact that even in a year that you weren't even supposed to make the playoffs or be a competitive team, not only do you make the playoffs, you're, you know, really, if you dissect this series enough, you're 1 to 2 minutes away of game time of winning this series. You know, at the end of game four and at the end of this one in game six, you know, you play a couple, you take a couple minutes off the series, you're winning this thing. So I think you have a lot to be proud of in the fact that you weren't supposed to be here. You had a collection that didn't really look like it'd work on paper, but it did. And you get to play in the playoffs and take a game to six games or take a team to six games. So I think there's a lot to be proud of, and I think the future's bright in Smashville.
Yeah, I think, you know, first reaction about the series, it's a gut punch the way that you go, especially, you know, like you said, in Game 4 at home with the two late goals, the one late goal in regulation, the one early goal in overtime. That one's, you know, heart-wrenching to go down 3-1. But, you know, the resiliency of this Predators team was great. They pulled out one in Vancouver in Game 5. But just to have another, you know, gut punch in game six, especially that late, was huge. And just the like the sheer number of chances that you had, like you said, 2 for 21 in the power play moments for the Preds, you know not being able to take advantage of those is pretty big and, you know, very frustrating. But, you know, as an overarching theme, I think you got a little bit of a taste of what this team absolutely can be. They had some high highs. I know didn't Forsberg set like a goals record or something like that for the Preds this year?
For the franchise, yeah.
Yeah, for the franchise record. Set that mark in goals as well. And you got a few younger pieces that played pretty well. I know Nyquist had a decent year once again as well. So, you know, you've got some pieces that you can work with. It's just, you know, finally being able to get some tenure on the younger guys and, you know, some more consistency from the veterans on the team. I think it should be a positive outlook for the years to come.
We'll see what they do in the offseason. Again, some questions coming up on the veterans and some of the stars. Mm-hmm. We'll go to the NFL next. One of the weirder situations in the NFL, at least on draft night. The Atlanta Falcons made the biggest splash in NFL free agency when they decided to sign former Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins to a 4-year deal worth $180 million. There were questions as to why Cousins decided to leave Minnesota. Well, we may have a few answers to those questions as per a new report. For one, the Falcons were willing to give Cousins more guaranteed money, but apparently the Vikings' draft plans also may have played a factor in Cousins leaving the team in the offseason. Per that new report, the Vikings had been upfront with Cousins from the start about potentially drafting a quarterback high in the first round, even if he decided to re-sign with the team. The ironic part now is that Cousins' new team, the Atlanta Falcons, proceeded to turn around, shock the sports world, and select Yes, a quarterback, Michael Penix Jr. from Washington, with the 8th overall selection. Cousins reportedly was appreciative that Minnesota was upfront with him about their draft plans, which they then executed to select Michigan's J.J. McCarthy at 11th overall. It's clear now Cousins was searching for an opportunity to start and be the starter for a considerable amount of time, but Atlanta has now placed pressure back on Cousins by drafting not only a quarterback in the top 10, but one that turns 24 years old this week, which will expedite his timeline. As we know, NFL media reported before that Cousins had no idea the Falcons were going to select a quarterback at number 8, a decision that left him, quote, shocked and disappointed. While the Cousins did sign a 4-year deal, it becomes easier for the Falcons to back out after the first 2 years. When do they decide to pull the trigger and move forward with Penix? Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. This makes things really awkward now that we know this especially. Yeah. Considering Cousins left Minnesota because they were going to draft a quarterback, and, well, what does Atlanta do? They draft a quarterback who is, by the way, 3 years older than J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
So you have to expedite Penix. Penix 24 already this week. There's not a lot of time to wait around if he's going to be your starting quarterback. I mean, if he's waiting 4 years, he's going to be 28 years old by the time he's under center. I don't think they wait that long. And now hearing that there's some loopholes that they could get out of this contract after 2 years, or at least be able to be, you know, a little bit more flexible trading the contract. It puts a lot of pressure on Kirk Cousins. It really makes things awkward between him and the front office, between him and potentially Michael Penix.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that first conversation like, do you think? Hey, I didn't think they'd draft you, and I did not want them to draft you.
Yeah.
And I'm disappointed.
But welcome.
But welcome to Atlanta, and I'm happy to have you here. Weird, awkward potential dynamic going on there. I'm not sure. And I'm wondering now how this is going to pan out. You know, how does this go with Cousins mentoring the guy he didn't want them to select? I'm not sure how this is going to work out. And it throws a wrench in the dynamic between him and the front office as well, who he thought was bringing him in to be the 4-year starter.
Yeah. Yeah.
What does the Michael Penix selection do for the dynamic between Cousins, the front office, and even his new fellow rookie quarterback?
Well, I think we knew this when they drafted him, that it was going to be awkward. Even in the press conference where Raheem Morris was talking about when they drafted him, it was, you know, yeah, we let him know when we were on the clock, and our conversation, you know, between there is between us. But look, I mean, it's a tough situation for Cousins to be in because we know how good of a leader he is.
Yeah.
And we know the type of person he is. This is a tough situation for him because he's at the tail end of his career. This is supposed to be a revival for him, an opportunity to contend for a Super Bowl with a really competent, youthful roster in Atlanta. And instead of getting better on the defensive side of the ball, which many people, including myself, and we all thought they should go with that 8th pick, they go with Michael Penix, who's a really good quarterback and a really good dude. This just makes a very tough situation for everyone because the front office drafted him. Kirk Cousins in the front office can't be seeing eye to eye right now. It makes a weird dynamic for Cousins and Penix because Cousins wants to probably help Penix out, but he doesn't want him to take his job.
Yeah.
And then for Penix, it's like, okay, I'm here. I'm happy I'm in the NFL. I'm happy as the 8th pick. But when do I get to start playing football? So there are a lot of different things going around here. It's just, if I had one word to describe it, just awkward. You know, awkward for everyone.
Yeah, you're kind of really backed into a corner here if you're Kirk Cousins, because like you said, you're looking for, you know, a fresh start. You know, you're getting paid, you know, some like almost $45 million a year to go over to Atlanta to be the guy for the next 4 years, and for them to, you know, take a pick that high, I think that's more of a slap in the face than anything, because, you know, at least Minnesota had the decency to come forward beforehand and be like, hey, you know, I think we're looking to move forward. We know you're up in age, but we know that you're, you know, still a competent quarterback, but we just need to move on for the future of the franchise, which is a normal and, you know, human thing to do. For Atlanta to come out of, you know, left field and just, you know, throw this right on his table at probably like 8:45 in the evening on draft night and just, you know, say like, hey, your replacement is on deck here. It's got to be sort of a gut punch, and like William was saying, it does make it very awkward because you know exactly why he was picked that early, then you know exactly what, you know, talent he does bring. So, you know, I think Kirk Cousins is going to continue to be, you know, the human being that he is and be very nurturing and, you know, coaching of Michael Penix early in his career. But he still might be holding a couple different secrets that, you know, Michael Penix could use down the line just to keep himself safe. But, you know, you really do – Atlanta really did throw Kirk Cousins into a corner here, and I don't think he's going to go out of it without a fight.
Now to the association, Jason Kidd is back off the radar. But was he ever on the radar? The Dallas Mavericks coach signed a multi-year contract extension with the team on Monday. The Mavs announced their move a day before opening their second-round playoff series against the West's top seed, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Dallas advanced last week, eliminating the LA Clippers in six games. Kidd, who won an NBA title as a player with Dallas in 2011, is in his third season coaching the team and guided them their second 50-win season during his tenure, a 50-32 record, good enough to win the Southwest Division title. The length of the contract extension has not been disclosed at this point. The move comes right as Kidd's name was beginning to be floated as a potential replacement for Darvin Ham. With the Los Angeles Lakers, where he was a previous assistant in the 2020 bubble championship run with Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Quote, "We are excited to have Coach Kidd continue to lead our team throughout the coming years of this well-earned contract extension," Mavericks Governor Patrick Dumont said in a statement released by the team. He also said, "Kidd led our team to two playoff appearances in three seasons, and we are looking forward to his leadership in continuing to build and grow this already great franchise." In his first season with the team, Dallas went 52-30 and reached the Western Conference Finals, where they were eliminated in five games by Golden State. Overall, Kidd has a 140-106 record in Dallas and a 323-296 record overall in a career that includes stops in Brooklyn and Milwaukee. I had not heard, before I read the story today, I had not heard Jason Kidd's name mentioned for the Lakers. It would have been a good option considering what he's done. I mean, 140 wins in 3 years in Dallas. That's that's good numbers. And the playoff success is there as well. Now we'll see what he does with this second round series. I mean, but if he were to make the Western Conference Finals twice in 3 years, I mean, that's a pretty good option.
Yeah.
Obviously, now off the radar, being re-signed probably to a pretty hefty contract extension in Dallas. The fact that it happens now tells me perhaps he was on the Lakers' radar. Maybe he'd already gotten the call from the LA Lakers or was anticipating the call where the Mavs said, okay, let's lock him down so we don't even have to entertain that. We can focus on the playoffs and lock him down for a long time. He's done great stuff in Dallas, especially compared to when you look at his stops in Brooklyn and Milwaukee. He's done really great stuff with that young core, especially managing that. We talked about how hard it is to manage Luka and Kyrie on the same team. He's done it well enough to get him already to a Western Conference Finals, now four wins away from another Western Conference Finals. I don't think he was ever an option for L.A. I don't know, though, because this kind of tells me otherwise. Was Jason Kidd ever a realistic option for the Lakers?
No, because, you know, the difference between Tyronn Lue and Jason Kidd, Tyronn Lue has won a championship before, has the connection with LeBron James. You could find a way to trade for him. I don't think the Lakers were ever thinking about, let's go trade for Jason Kidd. And look, Kidd had a great year, and the Mavericks are still playing basketball. I don't think this was ever a real consideration. I wonder who's putting that out there. Because, look, every time something comes out, it's for a reason. And it's someone trying to push something out so that people are aware of it. So maybe it's Jason Kidd's camp saying the Lakers were, you know, possibly thinking about bringing me over there. You know, now's the time to re-sign me. He's, you know, got the leverage of, okay, we just won a playoff series. So maybe I can see it from that angle if his camp is pushing that out. But really, even when the initial report came out from Shams Charania of The Athletic, you know, Jason Kidd was never mentioned in that. It was Tyronn Lue. It was Kenny Atkinson. It was J.J. Redick. And it was Mike Budenholzer. You know, I don't think anyone said Jason Kidd. Now, I know he was a part of that group in what was it, 2020, 2021, when he was with the Lakers as an assistant. But even if I'm Jason Kidd, I'm not looking at the Lakers right now and saying, I'm going to leave what I have right here. Luka Doncic's a young star.
Yeah.
And, you know, an owner that trusts in me and believes in me. And going to the Lakers, where really it's like a two-year rental if it works out. So I think it's possibly his camp pushing that out.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I don't think he was, you know, an initial part of, you know, him being in the running for the Lakers job. Like William, like you were saying, you know, he's in such a good position right now with the talent base around him. He's got a young core that he can build around, even if, even when, like, guys like Kyrie end up, you know, leaving slash retiring whenever that day comes. He's got plenty to work with down there. You know, they've they've got a superstar down there in Luka, and you know, over in LA, you've got a, you know, a guy on the back burner of his career in LeBron, still being able to produce at a high level. But you know, beyond that, you've got AD, and then you're really starting to reach for who your big time pieces are going to be, because you know, and Austin Reeves is a good piece, but he's not somebody to make or break your decision on coming to a different coaching position. And like you were saying, the lights are bright in LA, and you know that being for a reason. And if you're not successful, I mean, they kick you to the curb. We saw what happened with Darvin Ham. Now, he was, you know, successful enough to make some runs to the playoffs, but you know, wasn't able to be consistent at that. I think Jason Kidd is a lot more consistent and would be a viable option. But where he is right now with Dallas, with all the pieces that he has sitting there to use, I think it'd be dumb for him to leave. And again, it'd be nice for the Lakers to push for him, but with that out the door, it's sort of a worthless thing to talk, you know.
All right, that's in the news with Dawson Wise. Great stuff, Dawson. A story that we would have covered, we'll open with tomorrow regarding SEC football. Some interesting rankings were given out today that we'll have to give our comments on to begin tomorrow's edition of Overtime. When we come back, we'll talk about EA Sports College Football 25. We've got some new news about a possible cover athlete. We'll talk about it when we return here on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
White Claw delivers a wave of pure refreshment and a variety of flavors. From the originals like black cherry and mango to new flavors like passion fruit and blackberry. Crafted using our unique brew pure process, White Claw delivers a crisp taste with only 100 calories, 5% alcohol, and only 2 grams of carbs. Check out your favorite retailer in store or online for White Claw variety packs, single flavor packs, and 16-ounce single serve cans. White Claw Hard Seltzer. Please drink responsibly.
Fan Run Radio is proud to present the 37 Club, an exclusive community of the lifeblood of Fan Run Radio. You, our biggest supporters. With a membership to the 37 Club, you receive exclusive content like podcasts, blogs, and videos, giveaways, and access to exclusive merchandise and events. So join the 37 Club today by going to fanrunradio.com.
Looking for a luxury RV getaway? Then come see Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Just imagine a personal oasis on the French Broad River with outstanding amenities just minutes from the Great Smoky Mountains. Enjoy the quiet, private setting on sites offering unexpected beauty and tranquility. Unplug from everyday life and plug in to the serenity of life on the river, big mountain skies, and bucket list sunsets at Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Serenity in the heart of it all. Visit tworiversrvresort.com.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Nothing better than cruising around town with your surround sound, listening to our final segment of Overtime here on a Monday. We segue over to the video game world, where we've talked about the upcoming EA Sports College Football 25 game a couple of times. And we got some new updates just last week. Now, there is an expectation that on May 16th, so that's next Friday, that there will be a full reveal about the cover athlete, some maybe possible gameplay, some maybe a finalized release date. May 16th is expected to be the date where we get more information from EA. But from Matt Brown, who's been all over this thing on Twitter, knows some people in the EA Sports building, has given some updates, and last week he gave a couple of them. In regards to the cover athlete, there are, quote, multiple cover athletes since EA is releasing multiple versions of the game. Each cover athlete is a current college football player who plays in a different power conference. There's, you know, a lot of speculation of maybe Nick Saban would get a cover, or maybe they do a cover of past players that maybe deserved one. But the athletes all play different positions. That means there's only one quarterback, one running back, et cetera, and they're four different, or I guess multiple different cover athletes. I don't think the number was specified, but I think it's, you know, anywhere from three to four different players, different covers is what I hear with multiple. So knowing that, you know, there are plenty of guys that we automatically think of, but it's important to note that, you know, Texas, you know, a lot of people thought about Quinn Ewers. Texas and Oklahoma now in the SEC. So if Quinn Ewers would be the cover athlete for one of the additions, that mean no SEC cover athletes. So I know like Carson Beck would be a guy maybe, and he caught a stray from me last week when we talked about it.
Catches plenty for me.
Yeah, the Carson Beck edition. Did you buy the Carson Beck edition of College Football 25?
No.
I mean they've got the name Jackson Dart written down there too.
Jackson Dart's like another guy.
Who's buying that one?
I don't know. I just think it's tougher this year, especially with all the stardom we had last year with Caleb Williams, with Drake May.
Jaden Daniels.
Yeah. There were a lot of options to go with. And now you've got Shedeur Sanders, you've got Quinn Ewers, but then the stars aren't as big as they were last year. I mean, Dylan Gabriel is a notable name, and you know, he would be a Pac-12 guy, or I guess a Big Ten guy. And I think he's probably the biggest name out of the Big Ten this year. Would that be?
I don't think it'd be wrong. I mean,
Dylan Gabriel. I mean, Ohio
really
State. Quinshon Judkins maybe, but it's important.
And Buka at Ohio State maybe too.
But it's important to note too. So I guess the exercise we can kind of go around with: who's the quarterback, and then kind of try and nail down the other positions. I think the quarterback would be Shedeur Sanders, and that would be the Big 12. So now you've got to figure out who are the other non-quarterback positions and non-Big 12 players. I think Quinshon Judkins at running back could be an option from Ohio State. Damian Martinez maybe from Miami. I don't think he's big enough, though. I think Quinshon Judkins is big enough, though.
Yeah.
Maybe a Harold Perkins from LSU.
I could see
Yeah.
I could see it, I guess.
Weasel his way in there.
I could maybe see it.
Because the problem is, if there's no same team and they're all from different conferences, then Travis Hunter would probably be wiped off there. And I have a hard time believing they put two different Colorado players.
Is there a chance?
Unless they did like a dynamic where both of them are on the one.
If Shadur's the quarterback, I think that's probably the surefire bet, right? That Shadur's going to be the quarterback. There's nobody else in the Big 12 that I can think of off the top of my head. That is worthy
that
of
running
being
back
on
from
the cover.
Oklahoma State. Who's that?
Ollie Gordon.
Gordon.
I know his name is in the mix.
Yeah, okay. I could see that, but he's not as big a draw.
He's
as
not
Shadur
definitely
Sanders.
Not. Yeah.
I will say there. One of the quotes that Matt Brown gave was one of them genuinely surprised him.
You don't think the SEC representative, if Shadur's the quarterback and Ewers is off the board, you don't think it could be James Pierce, right? As the projected 2025 number one overall pick.
Cool.
That would be cool.
That would be a surprising one, I would imagine, for him, right? Out of the SEC, I would figure.
I saw someone float the idea of what if the surprising one is a quarterback that plays for Texas and doesn't even start.
Arch?
Ooh. But, I mean, with him not even being
in the game,
they wouldn't take that over Shedeur. There's no way.
Yeah. I forgot he's not even in the game. They wouldn't do that.
He said he wasn't going to. He was worried about on-field.
Yeah, well, never mind. I guess that
could. Then you'd have, let's see, you'd have Big 12 covered, you'd have SEC covered, you'd have Big 10 covered.
ACC covered?
ACC?
Who are you throwing on there?
Cade Klubnik?
Hey, Damian Martinez.
Damian Martinez from Miami. Right?
Damian Martinez.
I don't. Florida State doesn't have DJ Uiagalelle.
Oh, jeez.
But he's another quarterback.
In his 19th year of college football.
Yeah. If they're doing different positions, though, that's going to be hard. Because you think of a lot like.
You really, I mean, at some point, you really start reaching whenever you're going through these guys.
That's why I say, would James Pierce be the surprise option? I mean, he's the projected number one overall pick in 2025. So
that would be cool.
Would they go that route?
One of your biggest fan bases, too.
I was going to say, would they go that route this year?
It'd be interesting.
Because that would be the compromise if they make Shedeur the quarterback. Because most Tennessee fans would say they want Nico, right? But if you want to go with Shedeur as the quarterback, then, I mean – it's a way to compromise with Tennessee fans.
I think the question is, do they go a defensive guy? You know, if it's multiple, I'm gonna imagine it's 3 to 4 people. So you got one is Shedeur Sanders, the number one overall, or one of the number one overall projected picks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think James Pierce is actually that ridiculous. I think that'd be a surprise to most, though.
Would it be a surprise to Matt Brown?
Yeah.
That's kind
of
why.
I want to know how many defensive players have already graced the cover of – like the NCAA football games, because I don't feel like there's many.
Has there ever been one?
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, there would have been if there had been games from 2015 to now. There would have been a few,
right? Yeah,
like you feel like there would have been a few of those guys that probably would have graced the cover,
like all the old ones. Like you had RG3 on the cover, you had Mark Ingram on the cover.
I don't think you ever had a defensive guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you've also never had going back to 2014. You didn't used to release four versions of the game.
Yeah,
with four different guys on the cover. He used to release one, usually the Heisman winner.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Interesting. Well, hey, we'll start right here. Let's be the first people to do it on terrestrial radio, the James Pierce edition of EA Sports College Football 25.
I'm all for it. And
don't
buy
fire
it
me up
heartbeat.
Like this.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to be in store tomorrow.
Exactly.
That would be fun. All right, that's going to wrap it up here on a Monday edition of Overtime. We'll see you again tomorrow to wrap up and discuss all the action in the NBA in a very intriguing ranking that was given by, what was it, 24/7?
CBS.
We'll break that down tomorrow. We'll see you.